The following Dharma talk was recorded in May 2014 in Excelsior Spring, Missouri. It is one of 21 recordings from the retreat called Insight Dialogue, taught by Gregory Kramer. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Gregory Kramer is the founder and guiding teacher of Metta Programs and has been teaching insight meditation since 1980. He developed the practice of insight dialogue and has been teaching it since 1995. Gregory is the author of numerous books. Find out more at www.metta.org.
So as you're sitting here now, you're really at, you know, the tip of the rest of this life. You're at the unfolding edge of the wave of the past. This body sitting, being born into a body, how many years ago? All the meals you've eaten, all that oatmeal, whatever. Whatever words have touched the ears, whatever injuries have occurred to the body. Whatever hurts, whatever victories, whatever relationships, touching this moment, ripening this very moment, just like this. This is it. Just like this. Conditions, whatever they are, however complex, have produced exactly this. And each action, each decision we take conditions what's next along with just this. Just as this moment is conditioned, for example, in the very immediate past by this retreat, by this practice, and by your lifetime of meditation practice and search. And there are certain things that many people, perhaps including you, since you're at this retreat, have come to consider crucial to, the life well lived, to goodness, to awakening, to whatever your model of life inclines the heart towards. One of those is, in fact, meditation as such, bhavana, cultivating the mind. Just like we're doing right now. So for this contemplation, this reflection, I invite you to hold forward in the mind in each pause this sense of meditation, of cultivating the mind in its power, its subtlety, its capacity to be flexible, bright, alert, aware, calm, penetrating. Its capacity to be loving, caring. Its capacity to see how things are, even when things may not have accorded with a certain view. Well, okay, it can release and learn and adapt. All those qualities. And how does this live in you now? You've been touched by relational practice. Relational meditation practice, not just any kind of relational practice. But cultivating the mind, bhavana, in relation is now part of the picture. It's not the only part, though. It's the whole thing that we're inquiring into. But just wanted to remind you that nothing is left out. So you can reflect on this importance of bhavana relationally as well as individually. What's the picture now? What's conditioned within you? How does the heart incline? Speaking the truth, we know, is from much more than the intellect. And this is a good time to honor that practice of touching what's beneath the words. Can we touch that wordless value, that wordless inclination of the heart towards bhavana, together, individually? And then perhaps we find words, maybe not, I don't know. And listening deeply, we listen also in this way, at this level. So when you speak about relational meditation, it's not in the abstract. It's here, this is it. This moment, this life, here and now. Take your time. Let your practice and the practice of others support you. Touching any sense of bhavana, of cultivating the mind that might be present now, cultivating mindfulness, cultivating compassion. Cultivating friendliness, loving kindness, sympathetic joy. Cultivating investigation, energy, whatever it is, just cultivating human decency. And what this is in your life and what it means to a whole life, not just a retreat life, but including a retreat life. Full sense of bhavana, full sense of cultivating and developing and maintaining what is deeply beautiful. listening deeply, letting the pause, this very pause, support you. Another aspect of the path that many take as central, or like the Buddha took it as the first step on the path, is giving. If we were Christians, we might say charity. As Buddhists, we use the word dana. Giving that is truly experienced as integral to whatever, however, one conceives of the path. Not, for example, not a tip or a thank you to a teacher, but really central to the path. Internally, we may touch the opening of the hand, the opening of the heart as that practice. Experiencing it in the world, we may say, oh, well, obviously, that which I treasure in bhavana, in cultivating the mind, can't go forward without the giving, without the support, and really being moved by that, not holding that at arm's length, finding the joy in it. Not the social obligation, or not connected with a person, but connected with a sense of the whole tradition that moves you, whatever that tradition may be. Teachers are just expressions from that, what they've learned. So again, speaking the truth here, really involves deep investigation, touching what is wordless in that movement of the heart of giving, touching what is wordless in that sense of participating in a vast and unbroken tradition, in the case of Buddhism, and in the case of Christianity and Judaism, Islam. I mean, religions are never about, well, real, true religion, about making money. So without the giving, it's all lost, all of it. And what would the world be like? You don't need to go into that dark place. It's more to touch the movement of your heart. In that sense of speaking the truth, it comes forward, is offered here. And listening deeply, we allow ourselves to be touched. What is known? What is emergent? What is true? As you spend a bit more time with this giving, I just want to remind us that giving is inherently a relational act. The giving and receiving, if you will, is a kind of touching. And like any act, it has results, you know, both in our hearts and the hearts of the receiver and so on. But really what I'm pointing to is that it goes beyond what we know. In the sense of me as an individual giver or something, yeah, it does open our hearts. We can understand that. But what happens down the road from the open heart? What the impact of an expanded mind where self and other are not so rigidly defined? And what happens with a receiver, whether he or she or they are in expansiveness or not? Something moves through them. In the case of a Dhamma teacher, we're not just supporting an individual, actually, but all of that person's teachings going forward that are empowered. And the same would be the case for supporting a rabbi, a priest, any cleric. The same would be true of supporting a social worker, an aid worker, a doctor, and so on. The giving moves through. It's not a small act, profoundly relational, and perhaps less bounded than we might initially observe. Listen deeply. Speak the truth. Reflection of these pillars or centerpieces of the spiritual path. I touch Sangha, community, spiritual friendship. And I'm guessing that many of you have heard different teachings on how the Buddha considered spiritual friendship, you know, the whole of the holy life. And clearly he devoted much of his life to developing a monastic sangha. And in our time and place, this continues to be, you know, important for carrying the Dhamma or the Dharma in different traditions. And so do, of course, our lay sanghas and our mixed sanghas, monks and nuns and lay women and lay men. And of course, you can find community as absolutely central in Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, and so on. You've been practicing meditation in relationship. Perhaps it opens up some questions or some doorways or some insights as to the nature of spiritual friendship. Perhaps it reveals a potential for spiritual friendship that comes into the most intimate moments of bhavana. Which is a perhaps different model than I go off and practice individually. And when I'm with others, it's wonderful community and I need that. But it's not when I'm meditating. And so what would such a view or vision or perspective hold for the nature of spiritual community as a whole? Community where just a glimpse from eye to eye with another person and you know that you've touched not only kindness and care, but you've actually touched moments of deep release together, of deep calm. You might also just contemplate the question, do you really think you can do this alone? I mean, it's really a blunt, simple question, isn't it? Well, yeah, because I'll never forget, I'll never wander off, I'll always remember morality, and when I give, I'll just give to myself. I don't need anyone else. That's a good one, isn't it? So I think you could take it from here. So there's just a few minutes left, and I just really wanted to note that, and it kind of sometimes lets us really touch the presence, the preciousness, the transience of just this, moment of spiritual community, spiritual friendship. Shared practice of freeing the heart. And you might care to observe the body-mind in this moment, conditioned by all prior moments of interpersonal contact. Prior moments of solitary tranquility. And if there's any sense of gratitude for your meditation partners, you couldn't do this practice without them. Thank you very much.